Welcome, folks, to the Build Me a Brewery podcast. My name is Chris Hayton, your host. If you've been following the podcast from the beginning, you'll know that we have just finished the six-part Meet the Brewer series. My aim with the series was to give you all, as well as myself, a good solid foundation of how other successful breweries have started out, the challenges they face, mistakes they made, and things they'd do differently if they had their time again. We now move into our topic-specific segments of the podcast series, and a very early consideration in your brewery building journey should be considering how you're going to raise the necessary finance and capital for it. You have hopefully at this stage decided on a concept of what type of brewery you want to be, whether that is a brew pub where the bar or tap room is the primary part of your business and the brewery ancillary to this. With this model, you'll be focusing more on your local market and taking advantage of high margin tap room beer sales with possibly a decent food offering available to clientele. On the other hand, you may be deciding to go big from the very beginning, being a production brewery. This will involve doing high volume beer production, low margin sales typically, with an aim to get picked up by the big beverage distributors to have your beer in the mainstream bottle shops such as Dan Murphy's, BWS, etc., as well as pubs and clubs. For this, you're going to need a lot of money, so be prepared and be mindful of this. You can also have a hybrid concept of the latter two, with breweries such as Willie the Boatman, Wayward, and Grifter being some of the examples of starting out as either a brew pub with an aim to scale up to playing within that production space, or starting out purely as a production brewery with a decent tap room as well to take advantage of those higher margin over the bar beer sales. You may even be considering the gypsy or contract brewing model to start out with, allowing you to dip your toes in before investing hundreds of thousands of dollars in a physical brewery. Just be mindful that the consistent advice given on this model is that it's not a very sustainable one long term, but if pursued as a short-term strategy to develop a brand and create a bit of a buzz about your beer, build a bit of a sales history to take to the banks and investors down the track, and also to gain a steep learning curve about the brewing industry, this can prove to be a viable way to minimize risk before jumping into the expensive decision of starting your own physical brewery. Regardless of which brewery or concept you decide to start out as, you need to then start thinking about how you're going to fund it. If your only answer is to get a small business loan, you're going to need to think a little harder than that. It's a very difficult task in any country you're living in to access necessary capital by traditional means such as banks to start a brand new business. But in Australia, I'm finding it extremely hard with a lot of potential guests, companies and services I've reached out to and spoken to in the financing space. A lot of them telling me that they lean more towards already proven concepts or established businesses rather than seedling idea stage businesses. An obvious option and most ideal path available to you is to try and come up with as much money of your own possible. This allows you to be one, not as debt driven and bootstrapped, and two, not having to give up more equity and shares within the business to investors, allowing you to keep more of the business ownership within yours and the founder's hands. This can be through personal savings as well as asking family and friends, which will most likely give you more flexibility and favorable payment terms than dealing with the traditional bank loans. Plus, the relationship you have with them will most likely be one of trust, confidence, and will most likely be excited to help you out and see you succeed. If you can scrounge up the money this way, this is the most ideal position to be in, but starting a brewery is expensive and you are most likely going to need much more capital, and so this path may only get you so far. So what other options do you have for raising further capital but still retaining ownership of the business? First off the rank is home equity loans. If you're a house owner, you can opt to borrow against the equity you have in your house to secure a business loan from the bank. For example, if your house is market valued at 700k and you have 400k owing on the mortgage, then you have 300k of equity available to you. Now, this is a line of credit that you can access from a bank to put towards the business. If each founder involved in the business is a house owner, this can be a very powerful tool to get easy access to capital. Combining all the equity available, this will surely get you close to where you need to be financing-wise. This type of loan is classified as a secured loan, as you are using your house as collateral to secure against in the unfortunate scenario of the business failing and something the bank can then use to recover its money. The terms of this type of loan are more favorable in regards to payment terms and interest rates compared to those that are not backed by anything, which is also known as an unsecured loan. This option has come up a few times with some of the brewery owners I've met with and seems to be a common option used by many startups and entrepreneurs. Word of advice, when dealing with the banks, make sure you have a detailed business plan outlining your vision, the concept, as well as the financials, including expected expenses, sales and profit forecasts, cash flow projection, as well as a solid marketing plan. Having experience in the industry you are wishing to start a business in will also look more favorable to the banks. All of the above, if done right, will demonstrate a level of confidence and reassurance that you have seriously done your research and have a plan to succeed. Another option you may have heard of is angel investing. Now, angel investing is equity finance for privately held businesses. This is where you will typically find high net worth individuals who choose to invest in promising businesses, startups, and venture with their own personal disposable finance. A lot of angel investors are commonly market leaders in a specific industry and therefore are able to make their own decisions about which businesses they choose to invest in. An angel investor will offer a promising startup equity finance in return for an equity stake or shares in the business they are investing in. Now, angel investors can provide much more than just capital. Typically, an angel investor is highly focused on the success of the businesses they invest in and often provide experience, knowledge, and network connections, and therefore can provide much needed business management and consulting advice to new business owners. Angel investments vary widely, varying between $10,000 and $500,000 US dollars. The typical average angel investment across all markets is approximately $36,000 US dollars, with most investments spread between $25,000 and $100,000. Angel investment sizes vary based on the disposable wealth of the investing individual and the opportunity they are investing in. Larger investments often come from a syndicate of angel investors that have pulled together, leading to large investments in startups. To share an interesting story related to angel investing, a tech company back in 1998 was looking for much needed startup funding. These guys were developing a new search engine and had grand plans for the future. Now, this startup managed to secure an angel investment of $250,000 US. Funnily enough, the investor paid only 6 cents a share for the company stock back in 1998. And lo and behold, the company was Google, and one of their angel investors was Jeff Bezos, the founder of Amazon. The question here is, would Google be as successful today without the investment? Not sure if we'll ever know, but other options that complement what I've just touched on lead us into our following two episodes that form part of the financing and capital raising segment of the podcast series. They are equity-based crowdfunding and equipment rental and leasing. The episode you're listening to currently focuses on the equity-based crowdfunding angle. You're going to hear a sit-down chat I had with Johnny Wilkinson from Equitice and not the English rugby union player, which I'm sure he gets quite a lot. Now, Equitice was one of the first equity-based crowdfunding platforms in Australia after government legislation being passed, making it legal back in 2018, following other countries such as the US and the UK. If you've ever heard of reward-based crowdfunding platforms such as Kickstarter and Possible, this is where startups can launch campaigns with a fundraising target in mind in the hope of interested fans or onlookers who will donate money to it in exchange for some non-monetary returns such as merchandise, novelties, or the option to purchase their product or service that they help fund. However, prior to 2017 in Australia, the equity-based crowdfunding model was not legal yet, and people were unable to purchase equity or shares within a business or startup, which in 2020 is now possible via platforms such as Equitice. There are also others that work in this space, Birchall being another well-known platform, so do your research and have a look out there. Equitize also hosted a successful campaign for Endeavour Brewing Company based in Sydney, who raised over $500,000 to assist in their expansion project. In my interview with Johnny, he explains the concept and how it all works in much more detail. I will note that this option may not be the path for everyone. There are eligibility requirements, and it is best to be unique or different in your product or service offering to the industry you intend to enter. Plus, marketing and branding is extremely important as well in the lead up and also during the equity raising campaign. It can also appear at times that this type of platform may be better geared towards those already established or have a previous sales history. However, Equitize and other similar platforms have had many other success stories of businesses at the idea and concept stage that have had very lucrative and successful equity raising campaigns. So we'll get stuck into the first part of this segment. I hope you enjoy my chat with Johnny Wilkinson from Equitize. Welcome, Johnny, to the Build Me a Brewery podcast. Thanks for coming on, mate.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
No, that's fine, mate. And I've given the audience a bit of an introduction about yourself, what Equitize is all about. I'm really interested in the topic when it comes to opening a brewery. I think it's a very important one, is how someone with a new startup idea can be an aspiring brewery or just a general new business startup, how those sort of people go about raising capital to sort of make that idea into a reality. So I actually came across your platform. I think Black Ops actually referenced you guys on when they were doing their possible campaign for crowdfunding, and equity-based crowdfunding wasn't really, well, it wasn't legal back then. I think there was some new legislation that came in place in 2017. So I was really excited to have you on and explain about what equity-based crowdfunding is and how potential aspiring brewery owners can maybe take advantage of that, of raising capital for their new brewery. So just before we do get into that, do you mind just giving us a bit of background about how you got into the investing financing game and you know, before you Equitize days?
Sure, yeah. So I've always had an interest in business and sort of a bit of an entrepreneurial mindset. As I was working out what to do after school, I didn't really know, but I knew I wanted to sort of get some experience and some capital behind me so I could one day look at doing my own thing. So I studied economics and finance. I then went into working for Citibank in equity markets, doing a number of different things, but sort of trading on the ASX. And then in 2014, decided that the time was right to look at doing equity crowdfunding. We had been keeping an eye on what had transpired in the UK, which was the first market to really kick off with equity crowdfunding. A mate of ours had been involved with AngelList, which is one of the first platforms in the US that focuses around angel investing and a similar sort of platform. So we had an interest in the space, you know, realised that there's a problem in Australia with a lack of venture capital, or at that point there was definitely a lack of venture capital. We were looking at a solution for companies to access funding, and the government had been talking about implementing some changes in regulations and legislation to allow for equity crowdfunding. So we kicked off in 2014, quit our jobs and went through H2 Accelerator to get the business off the ground.
Excellent. And I guess I've always been asking the question to our guests early on is, any sort of craft beer roots at all, or would you consider yourself a craft beer drinker, or
I wouldn't say proper craft beer. I mean, from when I sort of started drinking beer and with my dad, over 15 years ago, we were drinking Coopers and trying, Gage Road stuff as that was coming out. So I suppose back in those days, that was about as craft as it became.
You dip your toes in homebrewing at all? Or?
My brother did a homebrew at one point. My dad used to do homebrew. I helped out a few times, but never to too much success.
Yeah.
One of our very close family friends back in the day, he and his wife partner, they used to do a homebrew called Bill's homebrew that we used to all love. It was pretty high alcohol, but was really good. I've always had a bit of a fancy for it. I can't pretend that these days I'll always go to the sort of craft section of the bottle shop or whatever, or spend a heap of time on that. But I definitely enjoy interesting brews and different things. Love a IPA if it's not too full on, and I appreciate it, but can't pretend to be too much of an aficionado.
Yeah, well, it is starting. I don't know if it's ever came on your radar. You know, I know that you're always looking at the trends in business and new ideas coming onto the market, but I was only talking to Glenn from the Grifter the other day, and I'm starting to see a lot of smaller craft beer beers on in the bottle shops in shelves, like at your mainstream distributors like BWS and Dan Murphy. So I guess it sounds like there is a bit of a resurgence into more of those beers coming on the market rather than just your 2E's new and 4X and all that. So, tell us, a bit more about Equitice. Like I said, I've given the audience a little overview, but I was hoping that you could dive into more of the detail and give us an idea of what the platform is, the benefits and services to, new business startups.
Sure. So Equitice, in its simplest form, is an online investment platform that allows everyday investors the ability to invest in, great high-growth unlisted companies. One of the ways we do that is through the retail equity crowdfunding laws, which we were part of came into effect in 2018. And then we also do some more of your kind of traditional, sophisticated investors that might be investing, $25,000 or $50,000 into companies. And then we do things all the way through to IPOs for companies that are listing on the ASX. So our vision is to try and make early stage capital markets more efficient, let more companies access funding, allow more investors the ability to invest in these types of companies. And the benefit of that is, everyone should succeed and, have an opportunity to participate in this space. So simply what we do is we use the platform and technology and our experiences to make the capital raising process as efficient as possible. It can be very difficult and time consuming for companies, for investors, if they don't have access, it can be difficult. So we're just trying to make it all more efficient, bring those parties together, try and do it in a consistent fashion so that people can compare apples for apples, and companies coming up might be a different industry or a different stage, but at least they can compare them relatively easily. So we're just trying to make it easy for companies and investors to come together and using the platform and technology to make that work.
And are you sort of out on your own in this sort of space in equity crowdfunding in Australia?
So there's a few other people doing it. So under the regulations, you need to have a license from ASIC. Mm-hmm. And it's a very specific license to do equity crowdfunding. I think there's something like 10 or 15 companies that are licensed to do it. Realistically, there's probably 4 or 5 that are active in the space. So we've probably been out there doing it the longest in the equity crowdfunding space. We launched the very first equity crowdfunding deal the moment we got licensed in 2018. That was for a company called Zinja. We're very much focused on trying to grow it. So there are other companies like OnMarket, PledgeMe, Virtual that are doing stuff in this space. It's a relatively new industry. It's only 2 or 3 years old, and we're doing everything we can to sort of foster its growth and get more companies using it.
And I have heard of crowdfunding before. I know that in the States, I don't know if the States were the first to sort of come out with that sort of concept, but Kickstarter is a well-known one, Possible. But what would be, the significant difference between those sort of platforms and, to traditional crowdfunding to equity-based crowdfunding?
Sure. So the reward or donation crowdfunding, so you're either contributing towards a cause. Someone's gone to Africa and they've found there's an orphanage, they're trying to raise money to build a school. They come back and they put up something about that and they're trying to raise money. That's reward. You're donation base. The reward sort of Kickstarter Indiegogo model where you're putting down some money for a prepayment for a product or something, that's obviously quite popular. One of the most famous examples of that is the Oculus Rift VR headset. And it's actually a really good example of why equity crowdfunding is a better proposition for a lot of companies and more to the point, people contributing or investing. But simply, those aren't regulated under financial laws and you're not getting equity or an interest in the company. So all you're really doing is prepaying with the hope that, you know, they're going to deliver a product or you're contributing to support the business or something. So it could be really effective for ideas or causes or things like that. But particularly as a company becomes more established and it's further down the funding chain, and more to the point, to provide that benefit and incentive for, you know, your stakeholders to become investors, equity crowdfunding allows you to do that. So it operates in a regulated fashion. You become a shareholder and you share in the rewards of the business as it goes forward.
Yeah, and because I've followed the Black Ops guys sort of journey in their podcast and their blog, and they had an article dedicated to their financing and capital sort of strategy, and they went down the path of crowdfunding, had quite a successful, I think one of the first successful crowdfunding campaigns for a brewery in Australia. And but they actually said that the downfall was that it, even though they raised, I can't recall exactly how much they did raise, but it's tens of thousands of dollars, but they pretty much broke even with what they had to give back for the actual, you know, whatever they promised the people that donated. You know, it might be a case of beer, or it might be merchandise or anything like that. So simply, you know, you really aren't making a whole heap out of it, or depending on, I guess, the success of the campaign.
Sure, yeah, look, I mean, one of the benefits of all crowdfunding is you get to engage with your customers or people that want to support your business. And you do get sort of the marketing PR benefits, and you get people who are willing to support and tell their mates about your company. Yep. So that in itself is beneficial.
Yep.
There's invariably going to be some sort of trade-off, and if you have to offer a significant discount for people to come in on a product, yeah, the cost of producing it, the logistics associated with getting it out to everyone, all these sorts of things are really important sort of considerations that people need to be mindful of. So yeah, you know, you've got to really strike that balance and work out what's appropriate for the company and what it does. You know, they may have made a loss or covered their costs on that element of the raise, or, you know, the crowdfunding campaign. But, you know, they could have brought on 100 customers for life who love what they do, and if they maybe did an equity crowdfunding thereafter, would have then supported and become shareholders. So, look, some of the benefits and costs aren't always so tangible, but it's just a matter of trying to work out how that all comes together and balancing that. So, you know, we work with the companies to make sure that their objectives and strategies right around those sorts of things. So,
yeah, excellent. And it's probably a very fairly obvious question, but just, I guess, to share with the listeners and some of your thoughts, what are the biggest challenges when it comes to, I guess, entrepreneurs wanting to start up a business at that seed or idea stage? Why is it so difficult to raise capital?
Look, really good question. Often, if you haven't done it before, if you don't have a track record, or if you don't have your own money, or if you don't have a rich uncle that can stump up some of the money to start things, it's very difficult to prove to people what you're going to do. An idea in your mind is great, but there's a lot of risk in executing that and proving it. So often it's a long way between having the idea and then getting to a point where you've proven that it looks like a viable and potentially profitable business model. So, you know, it's one of those things where often people investing at a very early stage are investing in the person or the people involved with running the business because they want to back them and they believe in them. They might have an affinity or an association with the subject or the business model or the industry they're in, but often it's more linked to their personal relationship or their belief in the person running the business.
Mm.
And at that point, obviously, the risks of failure are their highest. That being said, often the risks of returns are at their highest too. So, it's really hard. The best thing that people can do is, try and save a bit of money and invest that themselves to prove up enough of the business model that they can give greater confidence to others to then come in. Obviously, sweat equity and putting a lot of your time and energy into doing that is also very helpful, but it doesn't necessarily get counted as the same sort of value contribution as what people might think. But to be able to succinctly and clearly articulate to people why you're doing what you're doing, what your vision is, and how you're going to achieve that is really important to get that buy-in and people to understand and want to back you and ultimately give you money, either as customers or investors, to let you do that.
Mm. And because I, in my sort of journey of putting together this podcast and speaking with potential guests, I got, I guess, maybe a misconception in my mind, but I was talking to a lot of companies that sort of advertised, through blogs that, they'd invested in craft brewery startups, but craft breweries and the craft beer industry. But it was difficult to get people to commit to coming on at that startup level. They would say, well, we will expand an existing brewery, if they want to get a bigger brew house or looking at, expanding their distribution network or something. But a lot of them tend to shy away from that, the early days idea, new startup level. Yeah,
definitely. I mean, using breweries as an example, until someone tastes your beer, they don't know that you can do anything great or different to the competitors.
Yep.
Unless there's a particular quirk to your model or your marketing, and even then you kind of need a combination of all those sorts of things to be successful as a craft brewery, given the number of competitors out there these days. So, it can be difficult in certain industries, and particularly when there's a decent amount of competition, to stand out and prove that you're going to be doing something novel and interesting that's worth backing.
Because the traditional banks or most small business lenders will tend to want to see at least 6 to 12 months of sales. Is that right?
Yeah, look, it depends on who it is and whether it's banks or lenders to sort of small business. But most of those will lend based on your cash flow, and they will look at your sales and revenue to try and work out what your cash flow might be. So they can say, well, we know that they've got 100K of revenue coming in, we'll loan them 50K on a 6 month term, knowing that they should be able to pay that back within 6 months with a certain portion of the cash flow as it comes through. So if you don't have trading history, very hard to prove. Most people or banks will extend you credit, but it's then tied to you as a person or your assets. So you might need to sort of tap into your mortgage or some other assets you own to be able to get that first funding to get going. So
And I've spoken to some other brewery owners who have said that they mortgage a significant part of their house. Use that as security to sort of guarantee a loan from a bank. Which is scary stuff. It's not something that I necessarily want to do, but I guess if you're passionate about it and you really want to go ahead with it, maybe it's something that we might need to consider. But so I guess just leading into we're talking about what banks look for in terms of sales history and proven concept. What is it? Because I've listened to some episodes where you featured on other podcasts where you say that out of everyone that sort of approaches you of wanting to come on and have a campaign on your platform to raise money, only about 10% of those actual business startups or ideas actually come to fruition. Is that wrong?
So, by come to fruition, as in they get
onto the platform.
Get on the platform. Yeah. So look, we obviously there's a lot of companies out there that need money. So we're up on the web and people can Google us and find us and that sort of thing. So yeah, we have no shortage of often great quality companies coming to us. You know, we're limited in the number of investors we have on the platform and the number of deals that we can raise money for. So we need to be a bit selective. And yeah, approximately sort of 10% of the companies we interact with will make it onto the platform. That can be any number of factors, either, you know, the quality of the business overall, their preparedness to raise money, our belief of the future prospects, the risk reward basis. So, you know, it can be quite risky investing equity in these sorts of companies or certain companies at early stages. So if we don't think there's a potential reward or return that investors can make from that, we might, you know, think it might not be so suitable or appropriate for equity crowdfunding. And indeed, you know, the company might be able to get other sources of funding like debt or loans of some description. So we have a process and we try and interact with businesses and make it as effective and efficient as possible, where we make an assessment of the business first of all, and then their suitability for crowdfunding, then the probability of how much they're likely to raise. So, you know, it is pretty competitive, and we put a lot of time and energy in trying to do that. We might not always get it right, but we try and help as many companies as we can.
So what are some of the basic criteria for, getting onto your platform? I know you mentioned a couple of things there, as, you know, whether you see it being a good idea, or, you know, is that an industry that you want to invest in or be involved in? But can you share with us, put it in the format of an aspiring brewery owner, maybe has been doing a gypsy brewery model, has a brand, you know, has a bit of a following, has a bit of a sales history, doesn't have a physical premises, and the whole reason that they're wanting to engage a platform like you is to, you know, get some capital behind them to maybe buy that brew house that they've been looking at in China or something and bring it over. Can you talk to us, I guess, what you would be looking at in terms of the criteria of what would make that a good campaign to have on your platform?
Sure. So in that example, and I mean, it's in some ways a good example, we would look to see what traction they have. You know, have they done a couple small batches and it's gone all right with mates, or have they been doing it for a couple years? They've, you know, had a couple main brews or styles they've been going with, and they've done a couple seasonal things that have gone off and shown a lot of interest. And then that relates to, you know, what sort of sales they may have had. You know, do they have 500 people that every single time a new batch comes up, they take it straight away? You know, how are they interacting with their customers and their fans? You know, have they got a big engaged audience? And a proxy for that might be, you know, they're on Instagram or Facebook and have, you know, a few thousand people that are following them, and every time they put something up, people are posting or engaged, that sort of thing. So a company like that, if they've been going, they had some proof, some traction, they had a decent sized audience with some engagement, then, you know, them saying, look, we're going to raise, call it $500,000, which allows us to rent this facility for the next 18 months, buy in this this plant and equipment to do the brewing, and leaves us some money left over to pay some wages and marketing. Here's what, you know, the sales forecasts look like. Here's what we're going to try and do and achieve with that. If that seems to stack up and we analyze it and the business and the forecast projections seem to make sense, and we think that there is a decent audience that they can go out to and raise money from, then definitely, you know, that's the perfect sort of company that we could help raise money for in this space. The more established, the better. But yeah, often it's there's a lot of really good things about the business and they're doing well, but they just need some money to either buy that plant and equipment, or, you know, maybe they're looking at setting up a little brew house or bar, something, you know, something like that. If there's an easy way for us to see that they've got the ability to execute and that having some more money will just generate returns and sort of pour fuel on the fire, then yeah, they're the sorts of companies that are really, really effective at raising money.
Yeah, and I guess another motivation of wanting to have you on, Johnny, and talk about the Equitize platform was you guys played a pretty big part in raising money for Endeavour Brewing, who sort of set up in the Rocks area there. They were the first brewery to sort of be involved in a platform like yours.
Yeah, so yeah. We raised some money for them in 2018-2019, sort of over December, January, I think it was. So it was started by a few mates who then went to their broader network and their mates and said, look, we're starting a brewery, you know, who wants to invest? And so I think they got something like 30 or 40 mates to put money in and help get the company going. You know, they were going after a particular sort of area or segment where they weren't trying to be too craft. They were just trying to be an independent brewer offering good quality, consistent sort of beers. So they'd done well. They'd been operating for about 5 years and they had the tap house in the Rocks. And they were looking to raise money to potentially get their own facility. They sort of do small batch stuff and some contract brewing. They wanted to get some money to set up out in their own brewery. So we helped them put together a campaign, go out to their customers, you know, their friends and family, other people in the network, and get them to put in. So they managed to raise about $560,000 from 585 investors.
Wow, okay. And what really stood out to you in terms of what sort of said to you, yeah, we want to back these guys, we want to have them involved in our platform? What were some of the big boxes that they had ticked? Obviously, the trading history sounded like 5 years, but anything else?
Yeah, so look, they put a lot of their own time and money in, obviously. Some existing investors had put money in at the same time as we were raising money. So that obviously is a really good indication that the people close to the business are backing it and doing everything they can. Ben, who was one of the founders, was running it and he was passionate. He was putting all of his time and energy into it. He had a vision, you know, all that sort of stuff. So, you know, looking at those sorts of things, looking at the fact that they had a recognized brand and some good marketing and distribution. I think they're in Dan's and BWS. So, you know, people recognize them and their label. And, you know, there was a good audience that they could reach out to. So yeah, so the, you know, relatively established nature of the business, the people involved, and you know, their passion and their vision, and then you know, the people that had already shown some interest in supporting or being a part of the business and driving it forward, had a lot of the elements of what we thought would be a successful race.
Well, okay, yeah, because I know that they've had a lot of talk about them in the industry about, you know, taste of their beer, and I've known them for quite some time as well, so probably not at that startup level. Did they have a physical premises when they engaged you, or were they already set up in the Rocks? Or
The Rocks and their bar had been there for a while before we got involved. I think that happened in 2017, so it had been going for a couple of years before we got them, I think.
Yeah, okay. Now, Johnny, just back on, I guess, more the nitty-gritty of the actual platform. When people want to, I guess, I don't know if you want to call it bid or invest in a campaign on your platform, what are some of the minimums that they can, I guess, invest and some of the maximums?
Sure. So under the equity crowdfunding regulations, the maximum a retail investor, so that's just an everyday investor, can put into any one company in every 12 months is $10,000. Obviously, that's a reasonable amount of money, and we don't expect everyone to want to invest that sort of money. But often we try and make the deals relatively accessible. Endeavor, the minimum was $100. Most of the deals, our minimum is somewhere between $100 and $500. Trying to make it accessible, but still very much, you know, people cognizant of the fact that it's an investment, and they, you know, they should think about it and make a pretty determined decision that they want to put their money away and that sort of thing. So yeah, it varies on each deal, and it also depends on the share price. So, you know, the share price might be $25 a share. So, you know, you might say, all right, let's put it at $250 is the minimum, or something like that. So there's invariably a number of factors that we work around and consider before we set what the parameters are. But yeah, most of the deals we try and have entry level of call it $250.
Right, and how does the share or shareholder sort of side of things work after a successful campaign?
Sure, so you become an ordinary shareholder, equity holder in the company. So in that prior example, you know, you've got 10 shares in the company. There might be, you know, 100,000 shares in total, and you own a proportionate amount of the business. You have an equal vote. You have equal access to dividends and those sorts of things as an ordinary shareholder. From the company's perspective, you know, there's certain information and rights and other stuff that they need to give to their shareholders. But in a modern context, if you set it up from the beginning and you're smart, you can have a relatively seamless way of putting, you know, your shareholders onto a mailing list, communicating with them frequently, sending out the annual information required, you know, digital share registry solutions, all that sort of stuff. It's not too difficult, and relatively efficient these days. More to the point, everyone that comes in and invests via us, we have all their information. They've they've communicated via email, so you know we have all their electronic sort of contact details and registered address and those sorts of things. So it's pretty straightforward.
And so a company will come to you and value their own business or their idea or whatever stage they're at. Say for instance they value their business at $500,000 or whatever, they will then say how much they want to give away the business. Like they might only want to give away 10 or 20%, and that so that is basically the number of shares that people on your platform can go and purchase. Is that right?
So yeah, it's a function of what percentage of the company that they're offering up and how much they're raising. But that is determined by the what we call pre-money valuation. So before anyone puts any money in, it's worth call it $500,000. And if they're looking to raise $100,000 on top of that, it then depends how many shares there already are on issue. So let's keep it really simple. If there's 500,000 shares on issue, then the share price is $1 and they're going to raise another 100,000 shares at $1. So it will depend on those factors. But the simplest way of thinking about it is in sort of percentage terms, and then what the business is valued at before they start raising money.
Yep.
And you know, the other important consideration is we don't want and we don't necessarily encourage businesses to raise too much and give up too much equity or dilute themselves, because that might impact their motivation to run the business or what benefit they can get, those sorts of things.
What is there a sort of average that you're starting to see of what the, you know, a percentage of the business that people are giving up these days?
It can be anywhere from 1 to 40% of the business. Ordinarily, and you know, this is more relating to your kind of traditional venture capital, angel investing, funding these sorts of high-growth startups, each time you raise money, you're probably going to be offering up anywhere between sort of 10 and 25% of the business, and that should theoretically give you, you know, call it a year or two runway to go off and use that money to prove that you can continue to grow and accelerate the business and go off and achieve the next things before you can then come back and say to investors, look, we want to raise some more money to continue this or go and achieve these next things.
Yeah, okay. And so someone wants to, has invested in, say, a brewery startup. It's been 5 years down the track. Business has gone well. It's grown. Therefore, those that invested have seen a bit of a return. They want to cash out. They want to exit, take their investment elsewhere. How does that affect the business? How does that process all work?
Sure. So it'll just depend on each company and where they're at. And, you know, it's important that the business has in place the sort of structures and governance to manage some of these sorts of things. And so we help companies before they raise money to make sure that they might, you know, be set up to handle that down the track. Most of the companies we're looking to raise money for, yes, it's likely to be anywhere from, you know, 3 to 7 years before they're going to be profitable and looking to maybe pay a dividend or you know, they might continue to reinvest their profits to grow the business, just depending on where they're at. But simply speaking, you know, in that example, if that that brewery that was doing well and raised $100,000 and was worth $500,000 before, there's 600,000 shares. If they then say we're going to pay, you know, 10 cents per share as a dividend, then, you know, if you'd invested and you're holding 1,000 shares, then you're going to get $100 as a dividend. But yeah, it just depends on each company. Some of those companies, you know, as had been the case with a lot of, you know, craft brewers in the past little while, they might be acquired by CUB or someone like that. So, you know, Four Pines, as an example, you know, those guys were acquired or part acquired, and, you know, the
Volta as well.
So, you know, depending on if they get taken over completely or if it takes a certain portion of the business, then, you know, they'll get some cash and be able to take that money off the table, and any investors would share in the same outcome too.
Is that something that's starting to sort of hit your desk a lot or come on your radar? The you know, is craft breweries an interesting topic in the investing world? You know, I know you see like the CUBs, you know, Asahi Beverages and all that. They're sort of buying up whichever craft beer or independent brewery that's starting to make a lot of noise. Like I know Stone and Wood's still independent, but I'm sure they're on all the big boys' radars of an opportunity for them to pinch them as one of their brand. Are you starting to see, you know, any of those? Is there a trend towards craft beer investing or brewery investing?
So look, I suppose the two important things to consider is you've got to kind of separate the M&A, mergers and acquisition, these companies being acquired, from, you know, people looking at investing in their motivations. You know, that over the past 5 years has been a big trend, in that they've been growing companies that have been acquired, and it might be a craft label or it might just be a new larger volume brewer that's doing something interesting. So it will depend on the business and, excuse me, where they're at. But I think most investors are probably investing because they have a passion and see some opportunity rather than for a pure financial outcome. I'd say it's relatively mature in the cycle, the number of craft brewers that have been acquired. And I think the big guys have learned the hard way that taking over a brand and bringing it in-house and brewing it yourself doesn't necessarily keep that support and favor, you know, sometimes it might be better just to invest or own part of the company and let them continue to do their own thing. I think that's probably more of the trend. So yeah, like with all sort of sectors, there's different cycles or focus of where there might be opportunities to be acquired, or what what areas or models might be best focused on to generate returns for your shareholders. But look, at the end of the day, if you have a decent volume brewery that your costs of production aren't too great and you know, people are buying your beer at a reasonable price, you should theoretically get to a point where you are profitable and that's sustainable, and then you ideally can pay dividends to your shareholders, or there might be someone look to come and acquire your business. So it just depends.
Okay, excellent. Well, just coming towards the end, Johnny, and I do appreciate you taking some time with us, and you know, there's some great takeaways there for people to consider when engaging, you know, the equity-based crowdfunding sort of side of things. But any, I guess, closing thoughts or advice, or you know, if you know their business idea isn't something suitable for Equitize or that this sort of platform, any other options you would recommend to them to sort of look at for raising capital?
Yeah, look, I mean, it just depends on what type of business you're in and what stage it's at. The traditional friends and family route is always an opportunity. The best and simplest way to fund a business is to find something that's profitable, and you just use your profits to pay and try and grow the business slowly. Doing that, and particularly if you have cash flow and a profitable, there's opportunities to borrow, and there's a myriad of different lenders out there these days, like Prosper. So yeah, you know, the opportunities these days are much broader. There's much more competition, so the rates you're paying on debt aren't quite as high. But it really varies. The biggest sort of advice is looking to get some advice or some guidance, mentorship from people you know that have some experience in the business or sector you're working in, or might have some connections or those sorts of things. So, you know, running a company, starting a business is lonely, it's difficult, it's hard work. Always be willing to sort of reach out and ask for advice or lean on people that want to help you, and often that might open the door or start a conversation or be really, really important and eventful in the future of a business, and you might just happen to meet the right person or investor that can help take your business to the next stage.
Excellent. Well, and I guess just wanting to share with the audience some things that you might want to mention, any big announcements for Equitize or any events coming up or anything you'd like to plug before we call it an end?
Yeah, look, I mean, it's been a really interesting first couple of years with equity crowdfunding, and then with, you know, COVID kind of delayed things, and we, I think a few other people sort of held back and weren't too active. But 2021 is hopefully going to be a really exciting year. We've got a new platform and technology that's been rolled out, and we're continuing to improve. We're going to be raising more money for more companies. So yeah, things are really exciting. Get on equitize.com and check it out. So equitize.com. And sign up. That's how you get alerts and information about deals as they come up. But look, much of the same. We've got some cool stuff that we'll announce, some new sort of business lines and things happening in the next little while. But 2021 should be a really exciting year.
Excellent. Well, thanks again, Johnny, for coming on the Build Me Brewery podcast.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
Thanks for listening to the Build Me a Brewery podcast. This episode was part one of two in our financing and capital raising segment. Please make sure to listen to our part two episode, where we explore the world of equipment financing and rental services with co-founder and director Jason Bayliss from Red Windows Capital. As always, if you're liking the podcast so far and find the content useful, please give us a follow and rating on whatever platform you're listening on. Also, follow us on all our social media handles, as well as visiting our website, www.buildmeabrewery.com.au. Much more complimentary content will be coming your way via the website, and please make sure you do sign up to our mailing list. I look forward to tuning into our part two episode of the financing and capital raising segment. I'm Chris Hayton, your host, and this is the Build Me a Brewery podcast.